Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Good afternoon, good morning, good evening, wherever you are in the world. I am Russell Tovey.
And I'm Robert Diamant.
And this is Talk Art.
Welcome to Talk Art.
How are you, Robert Diamant?
I'm feeling incredibly still.
Are you? That's unlike you, because you're normally like moving all over the place, flapping everywhere.
Well, you know what, babe? We are in this quarantine series.
Yeah.
And I've been thinking a lot about interiors. And
of the psychological interior of the human mind or interiors of a house?
I think both, actually, because I think they're incredibly linked and I think often inseparable.
Right, okay, interesting. Do you think they link to the artist that we're about to talk to?
Well, yes. And actually, there's one particular painting by our guest today, which has really struck a chord with me because, bizarrely, something I have done is like sit here in my kitchen staring at letters and I haven't opened them. And there's been a few letters sent to the gallery recently, which I'm guessing are from Talk Art listeners because it's become a sort of recurrent phenomenon.
Fan mail? You're getting fan mail, Rob.
Well, I don't know if it's fan mail, but it's more like letters from artists. And I haven't actually got round to opening these letters yet for some reason. And I've been looking at the backs of the letters thinking, I've got to open those. And I get so distracted doing everything else that I'm trying to organise in all the chaos of the last week that I haven't even opened them yet. And I was looking at a painting from 2008 by our guest, which has really sort of brought all of this up and made me realise that I haven't opened my post, basically. So,
That's cryptic. Well, we would like to welcome to Talk Art, Lenz Geerk.
Hello, hello.
How are you, Lenz?
I'm good. As good as one can be in this situation.
Exactly. Where are we finding you? Where in the world are you?
I'm in Düsseldorf, where I'm living, at my house, on my desk, like the last 2 weeks. Where are you guys?
We're in London and Rob is in Margate.
I'm in Margate.
Do you know Margate by the sea?
Sounds lovely, but...
Yeah, it is lovely.
So you've been at your desk for the last 2 weeks. You've been self-isolating and staying home. And is that where you've been making work as well?
Yeah, well, I can't go to the studio, so it's a bit tricky. But I started to paint really small sizes in a sketchbook. And I love to make small work, so it's quite nice. But yeah, of course, it's also a bit alarming what's happening outside.
Yeah. So how far away is your studio from your house?
It's 1 hour away with public transport.
Wow, that's quite a commitment every day. Do you go to the studio every day?
Yeah, normally.
So is that quite a commitment, making that hour trip there and back every day? Does it feel like...
It's quite nice because... I have the time to wake up, drink a coffee, and look at the work that I did the day before. And normally that's like the hour that matters, the next day in the morning, the next hour in the morning where you look at it and you're like, okay, that was rubbish. Or
oh, that's interesting.
That could be, because in the evening you always have a good feeling.
Right.
But in the morning it's like, okay, I slept through and... This is not going to work.
Do you set yourself a certain time, like an actual regimented time to go and spend in the studio and leave by? And
oh, no. the problem is in the evening, my girlfriend, she has like a very, she works in a, how do you say that, nursery?
Yes.
So she has a really strict timeline.
Yep.
And then when I'm really in the mood in the evening to go on painting, she's a bit in my head and I feel like, okay, I should stop, but it's always hard to stop.
Right. But you feel a certain responsibility to get home to your girlfriend.
Exactly.
I see. That's nice. So this work, you were talking about waking up and having a coffee. I read up that you had a series of works called Sleepless, where you were suffering a bout of insomnia. And insomnia is quite a big theme for you through your work. Is this something that you suffer with all the time, or was that just a period in your life?
Yeah, but it wasn't like so much a physical insomnia.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was actually talking to people who have real insomnia, and then I realized, okay, what I had was nothing.
Right, restlessness, yeah.
But it was more a bit about how the world is like changing at the moment, and how many people are like rising up, and there's so much people fighting for, you know, like gender issues or like diversity issues, and mm-hmm. especially with this like political situation. And mm-hmm. I thought, like, to think about all these things at the time made me not be able to go to sleep. And so I thought it was a nice metaphor to that we kind of have to wake up. Like, I was very impressed with the kids going on the street for the climate change. And I realized when I was a kid that, like, no way I would ever go and protest for something. And now I think this waking up or staying awake and reconsider things is something that we all have to do. And
there's definitely a sense of urgency, isn't there?
Yeah.
And immediate action that people are feeling that they need to take and shout about.
Exactly.
I spoke to you last year and we were trying to get you to fly somewhere, or finding out where you were flying to next so we could interview you, because I was in New York for a time and then you might have been in London. I remember you telling me, I think this is during like Greta Thunberg was really having her renaissance and everyone was following her and it was all about climate change. And I think you said to me that you were trying to travel less because you wanted to do your bit towards climate change.
Yeah, exactly. And it's so funny what's happening now. I mean, like, people were reacting when you talk to people a year ago, everybody was like, yeah, but we can't change the society so much that like people are always going to fly and go out all the time and do shopping. And now we see that in this crisis now with the virus, mm-hmm. we see like mm-hmm. actually if things are getting bad, we can change our life very fast.
Yes.
So that's what...
When it's at risk, when it's put at risk or other people's lives are at risk, then suddenly... But I mean, this is historical, though. This has never happened. But do you think... Yeah. I mean, in our lifetime, obviously, you had the plague and you had the Spanish flu.
Yeah, I was about to say, I think it might have happened historically.
Yes, but like as a global pandemic that actually affects every single country. We had the AIDS crisis, which is ongoing in some countries, and, you know, people are living now with HIV now, and like long lives. But that was that felt rooted in a certain community.
Yeah.
Coronavirus feels like it's affecting the world, which is strangely uniting. Do you think in some ways it's affected your work, the current climate?
Well, first of all, in size, definitely. But,
oh, right, going smaller. Okay, right, yeah.
Yeah. But I don't know, like this has just kind of started, and I think it will come out in many ways for in the art world.
Yeah.
It will have an effect. I hope that, like, my hope or the chance I see in this is that we are kind of admiring more or appreciating more the work of like people working in hospitals or supermarkets
yes.
all those jobs, and I hope they're going to be well paid. And I think this is a real chance of this. And yeah, in the art world, I think, you know, that like as a painter, it's always been a bit the thing. The isolation is always a topic because basically you're in your studio alone unless mm-hmm. you do portraits or...
you have sitters, yeah.
Yeah. But this isolation thing isn't very new to me. And as you mentioned before, like this domestic thing or people being lonely has always been part of my work. And
yes.
I'm looking forward to see what other artists comes will out. Make.
Do you find it quite autobiographical, your work?
Well, it was in a while. It was more autobiographical, but now I kind of like to set things like I'd like to make some things a bit bizarre.
Right. That are surrealistic. Surrealistic or
not really surrealistic, but more like that you can't read them within a second.
Right.
And like it's not like a story of my life, and it's not me on the pictures. It's like someone, and people find different things they can relate to mm-hmm. in the work, and that's very nice because mm-hmm. I think like yeah, as I was saying, with all this complexity of the world and all these big problems and big issues, I think it's very important to not have easy answers. Like, you know, this is me sitting on a chair in 2015 reading a book, but mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. it can be anything. And it's like we have to tolerate, what's that word? Ambiguity?
Ambiguity, yes.
Like,
well, celebrate rather than tolerate it. You have to celebrate it. It's like you're allowed to. We're also in a time where everyone's being fluid and more kind of non-binary. And I think all the quick hit of seeing something like Instagram, an image, and then taking it away, everyone's slowing down now. That has to change, and everyone's taking more time.
Exactly, and people are like so desperate for easy answers, and like that's why populist. Politics is such a success because it's very easy to invent an easy answer. Yeah. But I think what I like is that you can't really decode, like your story with a letter. You can't decode it in the first place, and it doesn't have one meaning.
Yeah, I think your paintings are very intriguing. And I think the way that you, for people who haven't seen them yet, like you often create situations with either one person or a group of people, perhaps two people, and there's a story to be told there, but you don't know what the story is or what might be about to happen or what just has happened or what they're looking at even. And they're very, very intriguing paintings. That was the kind of thing that I kept thinking about. Like you're waiting for some story to be told.
Yeah, there's a pause. Yeah.
Yeah, you have to sort of pause and sit with the work.
And it's really lovely because people tell me their stories then when they see the work. Like,
oh, really?
I had this amazing thing where there was I made a painting of a woman lying down, and there's a, in the background, there's a dead bird. And she saw the painting and she started crying.
Wow.
And I was like, wow, this is such a nice moment for an artist to make somebody feel so intense. And then she was asked why she was crying. And she said, I don't know, but I think it's a memory from a long time ago. And that's so nice that you can't...
Wow, like a kind of trapped, repressed memory that was in her subconscious almost.
Yeah, amazing. Exactly. And if you get those things out, like that's... I think that makes art really inspiring.
Yes. I was talking about your influences or the work that art is history-wise we can relate to. And Rob and me were kind of going back and forth about artists, and we came up with a few. And for Rob, he felt like it was Mirandi, wasn't it, Rob?
Yeah, Mirandi and maybe Modigliani.
yeah,
come in a lot. And I said yeah. Edward Hopper. I felt like, obviously there's Picasso in there, but I felt like Edward Hopper for the of solitary environments and the way the characters are never looking directly at you. They're always looking away, or they're not. They're being witnessed. It's like you're witnessing.
It's so fantastic with Hopper that now, like, because he was a bit, you know, not like a bit forgotten, and now like there's this domestic. Everybody goes through this domestic period, and we're all Edward Hopper painting suddenly. Mm. So it's very nice. But yeah, the artists you mentioned, Morandi. I love Morandi, but it took me a long time. But yeah, I like to make work that is like, you know, you can tell much without showing much, and like simplicity is, I think, such a great. I don't know how you say, like, such a great
offering
to bring your own story in it.
Yeah. How did you get into painting, Lens? When did you first pick up a paintbrush and see art?
Oh, I can't remember. It's probably a bit of a boring answer, but I always painted. And I think I went through a phase of, like, in the very beginning, I painted nights and
sky. Dragons
like
and
a
knights
shining
and
armor.
Castles.
Yeah,
and stuff.
Exactly.
Oh, right. Oh, really? So, yeah. What, as a kid?
Yeah, as a kid. And then it turned to football players. And then when I was a teenager, it started to become girls.
Right, lovely. Yeah, but these girls that you were attracted to, that you were kind of creating, or was it?
I was creating girls I would have been attracted to if they existed, but they didn't.
Right.
And I think I'm kind of still stuck in that.
So it's a romantic vibe that you have running through your paintings as well. There is a romance there and a longing. And I was saying to Rob earlier that it makes me feel like the movie. It's not girls. This is the movie about the gay romance, but Call Me By Your Name. Whenever I see your paintings, I feel the energy of that movie and the mood and the quietness of this longing.
I just saw it last week, but did you know that the house is for sale? Like the actual house where they filmed
really?
It.
Really?
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it would be nice.
Would you like that house?
No, I don't. But it might be a good headquarter for Talk Arch or something.
Where is the house, though? I've forgotten. Is it France?
France, isn't it? Somewhere?
No, it's in Italy.
Italy, that's right,
Right.
Yeah.
I knew it was European.
Wow. God, what's going on there at the moment? I mean, we're about to get into that zone, it feels like, doesn't it? But,
terrifying. It's terrible.
Terrifying.
I mean, there's something about your work that I said to Russ as well. I often think of, like, the 1920s, and it's not like... It doesn't look like they're from the 1920s, but there's some kind of aesthetic or something that I feel like it's almost like a link there between that time period. And also in that film that Russell mentions, you know, you think about the way the haircuts were and the kind of stylization of the clothes, and also the way that those camera shots are very, you know, they kind of set up very pleasing visual kind of scenes of people sitting down, or, you know, in domestic scenes that I think also relate to your work. But I don't know why it's the 1920s, but there's definitely something.
I think of like silent, they all feel like film stills. And what I'm drawn to is the theatricality. A lot of them, I mean, one of the main motifs is bare feet. There's bare feet everywhere. And I always feel like I'm watching a stage performance.
You just want to jump on that stage, don't you, Russ?
I want to jump on the stage and act with them. But it feels like they're performing, and you're witnessing a performance in some ways, rather than reality. You're witnessing these characters waiting to say a monologue.
Yeah, that's nice. I mean, I think that the 1920 thing is partly, like, at the moment there's quite a big renaissance of figurative painting.
Yes.
And when I think of the 1920s, I think that there was just after, like when psychoanalysis became a big thing, and people were trying to express that in the human condition with painting figures and painting people and painting bizarre moments. And I think after that, there was a long, like, the human condition was, like, people painted and made comments about painting. But I'm trying not, I mean, I'm not such a painter, so interested in the history of painting or to reinvent painting. I'm more interested in humans and human condition. And so I think this, and I think many people are at the moment, and this always refers to that time when it was, when like thinking about your own psychology was really
well, these are psychologically charged, your works, aren't they? They do definitely have the interior of these characters.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's like that's just what's interesting me.
Yeah.
And you are really the perfect guest for now, because I mean, I feel like I was saying before, because we're all living much more indoors than ever before, it's quite interesting to almost see the world from perhaps your point of view, in a sense, because you're obviously by yourself a lot painting, but I feel like I'm almost in your shoes or something. Like I began to think about your paintings as I've been sat in my house. You know, it's a funny thing.
Yeah. But also, like, you know that, I don't know if you know, you have a commercial before the podcast.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I think it's different in every country, actually.
Yeah, you know what is in German? In Germany, it's The Sims, the computer game.
Really?
Oh.
How funny. Yes.
And I think The Sims has a huge renaissance because, first of all, people are, like, at home playing computers, and The Sims is, like, this making of interior and life and, like,
creating your own
and
world.
And also controlling a universe or a life, because then you become
people,
the kind of god, don't you, if you're the you're the player.
Yeah.
That's so interesting. I actually read an interview recently with a woman who was one of the main designers of The Sims. And she's an incredible woman. I'm going to try and look it up now.
She's
amazing.
Like, incredibly rich as well, right?
No, but she's not bothered by that at all. She's like she's not a kind of materialistic person at all. She's like super brainy. And the interview, or was it a video I watched even? She's so brilliant. I'm going to try and find it now because she's amazing.
All right, fine.
But that's so interesting, The Sims.
Yeah.
How many paintings do you work on at a time? Do you have a whole lot, or when you're able to get in the studio?
Just one. But I often, like, underneath the paintings, there is like often like 10 other paintings because I love to overpaint.
Because you get frustrated in and not liking what you've done, or is this actually the whole process of getting to the end product?
Well, it's more like I start painting something and then I'm like, okay, this hand is beautiful. I'm just gonna leave this hand and go from that hand, and then I'm like, okay, this is a nice sky, but the hand is too light, so it has to be a night. It has to be a day sky, and then like. Mm-hmm. You know, it comes together like a puzzle.
How do you know when it's finished then?
Well, once I'm happy with every part.
Oh, right, okay.
Like, with every part of the puzzle, then I'm like, okay, this is done.
And how long would that take, each painting?
It's very, very hard to tell. Sometimes it can take a few weeks, and sometimes it's a day. Like, you never know. But sometimes the paintings, like when you rework them over and over, they get very heavy. And I kind of like that you know, you can carry the weight of all the work.
It's like
that's really nice. So like the physical paint becomes like a representation of the kind of journey it took to make it, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I recently acquired a painting by you of an apple that's been cut in half, which I am absolutely obsessed with. And that's like one of the many themes that come up a lot, like apples and pears and flowers and croissants. There's a lot of food that goes into your work. Someone eating spaghetti, shoveling spaghetti into their mouth. What is that? And tell me a bit more about my apple, please.
Well, first of all, I love food.
Right.
And I think it's like one of the things that also everyone can relate to, because we all know an apple, everyone in the world. Mm-hmm. And it's a bit tricky because I was painting a pear some time ago, and also cut in half like your apple. Mm-hmm. And then my mom said to me, like, "Oh, Lance, this is nice. This is so sexual."
Your mom said that?
Yeah.
Right.
And I was like, okay.
Okay, mom. Why'd you find a pear sexy, mom? Okay.
Okay. Interesting.
Yes.
So it's like weird that, like, yeah, fruit is such a, I don't know, it's just the nicest thing to have in a still life, because it's like, it goes away. It will, how do you say?
Rot.
It will die soon. It will rot soon.
Yes, yes, yes.
But also, it's like, you do it haptically. You take a fruit with your hand, you eat it with your hand, like you want to touch it.
Yeah.
And it just brings a lot of, I don't know, like there's so many nice old still lives with fruits in it. And
yes, yes, yes.
It's the only way to keep an apple alive is to paint it, because the apple you have, like a few minutes later, will be dark and brownish. So, you
it's
know.
Capturing a moment again. That's
exactly.
Capturing a moment that's going to be lost, a fleeting look. A half smile, some fruit or food which would no longer be there. How long would that painting have taken to do? Can you remember how long that took?
Oh, I think you have to lift it up and see. Do you have it already?
Yes.
The more
heavy it
is, the longer it took.
Ah, okay, all right.
That's so interesting.
Oh, my God. And that's the barometer for all of your work. If it's really heavy, then it's been a longer process.
Exactly.
Wow. Do you find it hard to then sell your works, to let your works leave the studio and to go into people's houses and institutions?
Yeah, sometimes it's hard. I started to keep some works last year, just because I thought, like, okay, I've no work left, and maybe I want to hang something up in my apartment at some point. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, okay, maybe I should just keep some.
And you like living with your own work then? You're quite happy to have your own paintings around?
I don't. That's the thing. But I keep them in case. I have some other artists' work at home.
What sort of things do you live with? Do you ever buy art, or is it more
trade?
Swapped?
Yeah, I trade sometimes. But here, like in the room I am now, there's a painting by Jenna Gribben.
Yes, love.
Oh, yeah, great.
It's a really nice painting, and then I have some.
Was that a trade, or did you buy that for yourself?
I bought that. I didn't know her.
Amazing.
And I traded some works with Louis Fortino.
Yes, we love Louis.
No way, we love Louis Fortino. He's so good.
Yeah, he actually spoke about you, and they're part of like a really like Jenna's really good friends with Daron Langberg and Lewis and Salman Tor. They're like a really cool crew, which I sort of link you in with, that are all coming up at the same time and having a lot of attention on them right now.
That's nice. Yeah, I love him, man. We talk a lot. But he, I told him I'm a bit afraid to go on your podcast because I love gossip. And I was worried I would just like say like gossip with you about everyone and everything.
Give us some gossip.
No.
You're not going to.
My girlfriend will kill me if there's gossip.
Is your girlfriend an artist? Oh no, you said she works in a nursery, doesn't she?
Yeah.
Does she like your art though? What does she think of your work?
She loves it, but she's sometimes also critical, which is nice because she's honest.
Yeah, that's great, isn't it? Someone
do you trust her eye?
I trust her eye, but I realize, like, you know, artists are so, like, how do you say, so sensitive.
Sensitive,
yes.
Yeah, so, like, when I send her a picture of a painting and she says, like, great, And then I feel like, what? It's not what, fantastic.
Yeah, I know.
Like,
I know.
You know, like, she says, like, great, shall I buy zucchini for dinner? I'm like, what? How can
what?
You?
What? Hang on a minute. You need to be flawed, right? I know. Well, yeah. Well, I have the same as an actor. It's like my boyfriend, I think, is a really good barometer because he won't ever lie to me to the point where I'm actually quite upset and offended. But if he likes something, then when he does like something, I'm like, okay, you genuinely, you're into that. He's not just telling me the whole time everything's great. But when he doesn't exactly. like something, he's like, no, you're overacting there. No, I don't think you're very good. I don't believe that. I don't know why you're doing that voice. What's that face? And you're like, this is really offensive, what you're doing. Yeah. You have to be really sensitive to me. But, you know, exactly. that it toughens you up. And the reality is, when it does get a good review, you feel brilliant.
Exactly. I think whenever I've seen you in things that I think are really extraordinary, I will always tell you. But otherwise, if I think it's good, you know,
I can tell as well with
good.
You.
I like, just well don't done, talk about great. It.
You'd be like, well, I
no,
like
but
that
I just
jumper.
Try and not talk about
I
it.
I like that jumper that character
interested.
Was wearing.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay,
but, no, but only
the
because
clothes.
For that reason you've just said, though, because I feel like if I'm just like, every time you do something, it's incredible. I don't think that's necessarily even possible, because everyone does things that are great sometimes. And then, leading people, like actors and stuff, will do films that are terrible sometimes or do films that are amazing, you know, whoever they are, even if it's
you
like.
Yeah, it's hard to keep
you know,
a constant,
Helen Mirren,
sort
I'm sure,
of,
has done movies that aren't great sometimes or what have you. So yeah, it's a funny thing.
Yeah, I think it's like when you like you want them to lie sometimes and just tell you it's amazing, but like the more you know them, the less
you know when they're lying, don't you?
Yeah, yeah. So it's like a circle of like it's,
hell.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
So can I ask you something, Lens?
Of course.
I heard that when you were growing up that you liked comic books. And it got me thinking about this idea, because in comic books you often create a universe, like a kind of a place maybe that the comic book could take place within, you know, like a...
Existing,
or even a card, yeah. Or even a cartoon, even, you know, like a world that is created. So do you see your own work as being like... all connected? So are all the objects from the same place or the same sort of time, or are they all very different series?
Oh, that's a good question.
Really good, Rob.
Thank you, Russell.
I haven't got thought about star. That to be honest. Are they in the same universe? Yeah, that's like, I guess so, but well, sometimes I paint a face that looks very similar to a face I painted before, and like, and then I'm like, oh, hey, hi again. Like,
oh, that's interesting.
May I introduce you to another setting or another room or some other clothes? But
they're like actors. They're like actors then. Your characters are like actors, and you're casting them in different roles.
They are. Or Sims.
Like. They're the Sims. They're the Sims. Can you talk about the large hands that you give all of your women?
The what?
The large hands.
Large hands.
I've really noticed that all the women have large hands.
Oh, do they? Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's a bit of a, you know, like I think I'm a feminist, and I think it's a symbol of empowerment, and I love to like turn like classical things around. Like I love to have, you know, a naked man painted by a dressed woman, because that didn't happen in art history so long. And I think it's nice to have like the female person as the active person doing something, holding a brush or holding their own hands. And and you know, like I think Louis told me he does that too. Like he takes Matisse drawings and then he turns them into men, like Matisse nudes. And
So the female nudie would then change into a man.
Yeah, transforms into a male. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think like this, you know, like the hand represents for me like doing something and being, how do you say it? Not the passive.
Being active and productive and
in control. And I like the people I paint to be. You know, like not to be objects, but to be
people.
You know, like I would never paint nude thinking like of it like I would paint a vase, because it's not an object. It's a subject.
Yeah, and I think you succeeded, because I think the people in your work, they have this. You kind of see the human psyche, like the interior, you know, brain waves, like what's going on, the intensity of that moment, which is also probably why Russell relates it to acting, because in a way that's also like a pursuit of human psychology. And there is something very strong about your characters in the paintings.
Thank you. How is it with the acting at the moment? Do you, like, is everything...
I was doing a play in New York and now the play closed and I don't think we're coming back. Well, we're not coming back. It's been cancelled and Broadway's been shut down and all the filming productions have gone down. So it's full talk art steam ahead at the moment, which is fantastic.
Us encouraged and positive and inspired.
Totally. Yeah. And I think it's important to talk to people about, especially creative people and like artists, to talk about how they're experiencing what's going on at the moment and how they're coping and what their hopes and dreams are, really.
And it's interesting, you know, like I saw Lena Dunham, a guest we've had on the show before. She's an actress and a screenwriter and producer and director. And she's currently writing a story for Vogue.com, where she's like, every day she writes a new chapter and then the public get to decide on the direction. She gives them a choice. So there's this interactive sense of writing a thing. It's called Verified Strangers. But what I found really interesting about that is that you put Lena Dunham into a flat in isolation in England, because she's currently in England, and her reaction isn't to sit there and get all introspective. It's like, what can I do to be productive? She's already writing a new show and, you know, interacting with the world. And then Russell and I are here doing our podcast more than ever before, and you're at home painting. And I think it's interesting that even if we get tiny amounts of space, like we can all, you know, our creativity does kind of fight through and keep us going. So it's a beautiful thing.
What's happening for you now, Lens? Like, you were working towards a solo at Robert's Projects, right? Which is your main gallery in Los Angeles, isn't it?
Yeah, but at the moment, like, nobody knows. I have some projects in New York, but I don't, like... Nobody knows what's going to happen.
Keep making the work. You're still like forging ahead, making paintings, and
yeah, always. I mean, I can't. I get mental if I don't
work.
If I don't paint.
Yeah.
I mean, like, the good thing about this that we're having, like, just an online chat, is that I'm not so, like, you know, I'm like. As I said before, I'm a bit starstruck. I don't have to see you guys. Like, how could you? Like, I don't know. Like Ian McKellen, I couldn't say a word, because he's like standing in front of Gandalf himself. I would just be like frozen.
Mm-hmm. You like films, don't you? Then you're into films and TV and.
Yeah, I do. But also I was thinking, like, when we, because I was listening to your podcast a lot recently, and I always thought, like, oh God, I'm going to be in that podcast, and then I will hear your voice asking questions, and then I will just wait till the artist answers. because that's how
it has to be you. Yeah.
And it's going to be your voice. Like, oh shit, no one's answering. I have to answer. Yeah. So,
do you work listening to music or podcasts, or do you have anything that you?
Yeah, I listen. Like I always listen to a lot of stories and audiobooks, and it was quite good for a while because I got really like I made my like classic literature homework because I had listened to all the funny audiobooks at some point and then all the scary ones, and then there was just things left like Marcel Proust or Don Quixote, like these things you would never actually like.
You're not your first choice, yeah.
It's not the first choice when it comes to entertainment.
Things you feel you should listen to or read as well.
You're kind of like the dregs, the ones that you're like, okay, may as well listen to this now, or may as well pick this book up.
I love the now's the time. Proust is the dreg.
But it's not your go-to. It's not like now, it's like, okay, and now we read War and Peace when you've had all these other choices.
Well, with Proust, it's like... You know, like this audiobook was like, I don't know, 300 hours long. And, you know, you can just make a nap in between and you don't, you didn't
don't
miss
anything.
Anything.
I know. Just play the first 15 minutes and the last 10 minutes and you've got the whole story. It's fine.
Exactly.
How important is drawing to you?
Oh, I do that all the time. But it's gone down a bit because I have now... I bought little, I don't know how you say that, tubes of paint.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
That I can take
like
everywhere.
Ones.
Yeah. And so recently I prefer to just make little paintings instead of drawings.
Oh, that's so nice. Do you ever make them outdoors?
Yeah, everywhere I am. And it's sometimes a bit dangerous. Like, I love to do it when I'm in another country, I love doing painting in hotel rooms.
Oh, yeah.
But it's kind of dangerous because, you know, like, you can't... Everything is white. You always have white bed sheets and stuff.
You're going to, like, destroy the hotel room.
Oh, so you paint in bed?
Painting.
You like to paint in bed?
Yeah, I paint in bed in hotel... Because there's no table normally. And then it's like this whole, like...
That's brilliant.
I feel like, so, like a small-scale rock star. I smoke a cigarette out
like
of the
trashing
window.
A hotel room.
Rather than doing loads of drugs in bed, you're sat there doing a little painting.
God, that's so
funny. Trying not to ruin the sheets, the linen.
Yeah.
Some of my favorite works by artists are like on notepads from hotels where you see the kind of the name of the hotel and the address. And then people do drawings or paintings or, you know.
Yeah, Tracy's done that, hasn't he? Tracy Emin and Jonas Wood's done that a lot.
And Picasso did it, I think.
And Picasso did it and Kippenberger did it, didn't he?
Yeah. Lots of people have done it, yeah.
Well, when you made it, I think you can just pay with them. But I'm not that far.
Right. Oh, yeah, that's right. You paint it and then give it to the hotel and they'd let you stay there for free. Well, I don't think you're far off,
Lens.
I'm
loving the idea, though, that you've got your own studio.
Far off from that happening.
It's very cool. And going back to comic books, what kind of comic books were you looking at?
Oh, I was actually a bit of a snob because it was always important for me that the drawings are nice.
Oh, really?
And I loved the French ones. I didn't like cartoons so much, and yeah, I loved the French comics.
But are we talking like Hergé sort of? Tintin stuff,
no, more like
or...
it was more like adult stuff, but I just went to like the library and they thought it's comics, so it doesn't matter, it must be for kids. They didn't know there's like adult comics. So I got all
what was
those
what was going on in these adult comics?
Well, nothing too hard, but like, you know, like things about war and just like really serious. I mean, it
subjects.
Was not yeah. But I just liked the paintings. And then I had a manga phase, of course.
Oh, really? One? Manga? Yeah.
Oh, a manga phase.
Yeah, a manga phase. Yeah.
Yeah,
everybody went crazy for manga here. Like in the year, I don't know, when that was, 2000 or something. And then,
so you were 12 then? You were born in 1988, weren't you?
Yeah. That might be the right time, yeah.
Yeah,
and
perfect
then,
time for manga.
Everybody did manga, and I loved it. And I still have a comic somewhere where I sent a drawing to a manga magazine and they printed it and I was so proud.
No.
Oh, you'd have to send us an image of that. Like? I think everyone would love to see that. That's incredible.
Okay, I will. I think it's
that
a Dragon Ball character.
Dragon Ball Z. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think like it's interesting because in France, like the they call it bande dessinée, which is more like graphic novel.
Yes.
It's not like it's really like a established art form, and they really
respect.
Yeah, people hold it in high regard.
Respected.
Don't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, and like when I was a kid, and as I said, in the library, they just thought everything is kid, like it's all for kids, like. Mm-hmm. And yeah, there was it was very inspiring, and I always like the way that. You know, like, I don't know how you say it in English, Tintin, like the Belgian guy with his little dog.
Tintin, yeah.
Tintin.
Ah, Tintin, yeah.
Hergé's Tintin, yeah, yeah. That's what
Russell
I said earlier.
Russell actually played Tintin.
I played Tintin on stage.
You did?
Yeah, the Barbican Theatre years ago, yeah.
Did you have a dog as well?
We had a real dog, and then we had a human. I'd have the dog in my arms and I'd run off, trip up, I'd throw the dog. It was a teddy dog at that point, and then a human would come on dressed as the dog, and then we would go around together singing songs. We
so
did
then
it.
Then Russ turned his life into it with Rocky.
Yes,
he
I
became
got my
a real life
Snowy
human
now.
Tintin.
Yeah, and my boyfriend looks like Captain Haddock. So,
especially with his current handlebar moustache.
Yeah, he's got a handlebar
moustache, which is part of the insanity of this whole lock-in.
And Rob is Madame Castafiore. So it's all come together. Yeah, but I can see Tintin in your work, definitely.
Yeah, and the funny thing about Tintin is because his face is just a smiley, basically, and he has this, but he goes to this story, and the face is so anonymous because so that everybody can imagine themselves being Tintin.
They project onto him.
And that's what I love about the comics. Like, they tell a story and they make this, like, this empty face where you are in the story. And, that's what I like to have in the paintings as well. Like, a face that is slightly anonymous, or the eyes are closed, or you, like, it's not a person that exists. Like, it's not, this is the queen, or, like, this is the pope or someone. It's just, like...
Keeps
someone.
It open, doesn't it? Open for interpretation, and also that you can somehow, as a viewer, be transported to that place and almost like feel what the painting.
Well, it has a dreamlike, half asleep, the Peter Pan quality, which I love about it, the half asleep, half awake, where are you sort of thing.
Yeah.
Amazing. I love
exactly.
them. So we ask every guest, because you've heard Talk Art, we ask every guest two questions, very important. But we've also got a third bonus question, because we're in lockdown, but we get to that. But the first question we ask every guest is, if you could do an art heist, if you could steal any work of art in the world that you could live with, anything ever, what would it be and why?
Yeah, I've I've heard the podcast. I have the same answer as Louis does, because I'm the biggest Vermeer fan in the world.
When did you first discover his work?
Well, I've seen it only printed, and then I had this moment when I first saw it in real life. I went to Berlin when I was in art school, and then I saw this painting, and it really was remarkable, because after that painting, I didn't paint for a year, because I was like, it's perfect. Why should I?
No, so it didn't inspire you, actually halted you from... It stops
to
you
get
from
back?
Working.
How do you mean?
Because normally when someone sees a painting, they can get inspired and be like, I want to do that. But whereas you saw it and you were like, well, give up. It stopped you from working.
It's perfect. It was like, what else could I add? I was like, everything said.
Wow.
You know? Like,
and it was a little domestic scene, was it, with light coming through the window? And
of course, yeah.
And how did you get back into painting?
How
after
did you
that?
Get back into it? Yeah, I'd love to.
Well, I tried to make music after a few months of being like completely completely depressed. And then I realized, oh my god, the Vermeer made
you depressed. Wow, what an effect. Yeah.
Well, if you work for, like, it's like if you, like, let's say you are working on, you spent your whole life working on a internet platform that connects people.
Yes.
And then you realize, okay, there's Facebook. So basically, what have I done?
Yeah, wasted. Wow.
But yeah, then I realized I'm a very bad musician. And then I was like, okay, maybe I can say something.
What kind of music were you trying to make or making?
So I can't play an instrument. I can't read notes. So I was just having this computer program.
Just banging stuff around. Oh, a garage band.
No, it was like, it's called Fruity Loops.
I know Fruity Loops. Oh my god, Fruity Loops is amazing. That's like a kind of, that's almost like pre-Cubase. That's like what you would program drum beats and stuff.
Yeah, exactly. But I was always like, I just made a tone and then I put the next tone and then I put the third one.
I've seen this. Yeah.
Tried the third one like until it didn't sound horrible. And wow. So it was a really long process. But it was kind of nice also because I was just listening. I didn't know anything. I couldn't play a chord or something. So it all went through the ear. I just heard that podcast with Lucian Freud that you did.
David Dawson. Yeah, we went around the Royal Academy.
I wish we'd actually got to meet Lucian Freud himself as well.
Oh God, can you imagine?
We got the closest thing we possibly could, which is the most amazing human being, David. I love him.
Yeah, and he said that Lucian Freud didn't want to, he just wanted to look. He didn't want to know things. Mm-hmm. And that's how I made music. I just listened. But I think you have to have a little bit of knowledge. And I think Lucian Freud was lying a little bit because he can actually, he knows some things for sure.
He loved Fruity Loops, apparently. He was all over Fruity Loops. Freud Fruity Loops, they called him. So the other question we ask all of our guests is, Rob?
What is your favorite color?
Yeah, I've also been thinking about that, but it's, I don't know if like it's a, how do you say it's a violet or purple or
mm-hmm. yeah.
mauve?
It's this, but it's indigo. More blue than that. So mm-hmm.
indigo.
Indigo. I don't. Yeah.
Maybe indigo.
Is color important to you when it comes to painting?
Yeah, it's very important, and it's nice to combine colors that are a bit irritating.
To each other or to like the
public. Yeah, because they always make like the combination gives you a feeling and you can play so nicely with that. Mm-hmm. So that's, I think every painter loves that.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's quite unsettling. Yeah. You can create an unsettling feeling from color.
Yeah, you can create everything. You can create harmony, you can create like pain, like everything. But yeah, I was thinking like, I knew this question would come, so I was thinking a bit how genuine this is my favorite color, mm-hmm. because I think so I'm very close with my mother, and she said her favorite color was blue all the time. Mm-hmm. And I think as a child, I was like, okay, blue is the nicest thing, but I can't be the same. I have to like be an individual. So I think I just chose the closest thing to blue.
That's very
not
sweet.
Blue.
I love that. You know, something that talking about how you can create a sort of emotional response or tension or, you know, through the use of color. I'm also quite interested in the surface of your paintings because I saw one at Miami Basel in December in the art fair. And I called Russell because he told me about you. And I went to the booth, I think it was with Roberts.
Roberts
from
Projects,
LA,
yeah.
And I went to the booth to see the painting. And I was really struck by the surface. And then I've since realized, I think you painted onto wool, which, what is that just a type of wool canvas that you're using? Or and how did you come to work with wool? Because I don't really see that as a description on people's paintings very often. You often see canvas, but not wool.
Yeah, I use both. I use also canvas, but the wool came because I was like as a student, I was painting with oil on canvas. Yes. And then I got I got kind of allergic to the oil.
Oh, to the terps or something.
Turpentine. To the terps.
Or the glue, yeah. The rabbit glue size.
Yeah, so when I open an oil thing, I can't, like, I get a headache immediately.
Oh,
so
wow.
I started to paint with acrylics, but in the beginning, acrylic was really, like, I didn't like the texture at all, so I took this wool and I made it really like there was already something on there and a lot going on the material so that I could just like rub the acrylic into it like you can do with oil.
Wow.
But so now
kind of,
I...
Yeah, you kind of created your own way of getting a visual that you wanted.
Yeah, exactly.
Using a different surface. That's so interesting.
Mm.
But the interesting thing is I started to really love acrylics. Now I'm working mostly on canvas and I love how matte they are and how, like, sometimes a bit, how do you say, like, it doesn't give you anything. It doesn't, like, because oil color is so seductive by itself. Like, when you just make a monochrome painting of just one beautiful oil color, it's already so beautiful, so you don't want to destroy it. But with acrylic, it's not such a rich color, so it challenges you more. That's how
so
I
So you have to
it.
Sort of perfect your skill more and your... Yeah, you have to approach it in a completely different way. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, because oil paint does have an allure, doesn't it? Like a real...
Mm.
Sort of natural beauty.
And this has a matte surface. All your works do have a matte surface. That's right.
Yeah. And it's, yeah, like you have to make the image tell, you know, like a beautiful dress, if it's in silk, it's more likely to be a beautiful dress. But if you make a beautiful dress out of paper, it's a more of a challenge.
Or meat.
Yeah.
Like Lady Gaga.
yeah.
Well, or meat.
So the last question we ask all of our guests is, what have you discovered as your hidden lockdown talent while you've been
this
under quarantine?
This is our quarantine special question.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Let me think about it. What
discovered
have I discovered
anything new about yourself?
So you mean like...
Have you worked out you can cook something you never knew before, or you've been able to sew?
Like, I cooked a lasagna for the first time in my life. I'd never, ever, ever cooked a lasagna.
How was
it? It sounds insane.
Oh, he threw up. He got food poisoning.
No, I didn't. I ate the whole thing in about a day and a half, which is not healthy. But I loved it. And there was this meme going around the internet of, like, somebody making a lasagna in Wembley Stadium and that they were going to feed the whole country.
Oh, yeah,
and it was
yeah,
the most
yeah, yeah.
ridiculous meme. And it actually yeah. inspired me to... I was like, well, I've actually never made one. So why not make one now? So, and I succeeded. So I'm quite proud of
well
myself.
Done.
I never knew I could
congrats.
Cook.
Congrats.
Thanks,
yes, congrats, Ross.
I think I discovered my neighbors because... I haven't really known them. I moved in this house a year ago, and then like I know it's like a lot of older people, so we knocked on the doors and we're like, "Can we shop something for you?" And that's how I discovered my neighbors.
Did you go shopping
that's
for
so
them?
Sweet.
Did they want anything?
One of them wanted something, but the other ones they all have like relatives and someone has a caretaker,
so
they're
nice.
Fine.
Oh, Linz. I do have one more question for you, Linz. Is
yeah.
Do you have a representation? You're represented in Los Angeles. A, how is that being based in Dusseldorf? And B, do you have a European gallery, or are you looking for a London-based gallery or a European gallery?
Well, being represented in Los Angeles, even though it's far away, it's not very problematic. I'm really, really happy to work with Robert's projects. They are so supportive and they are doing an incredible job to help me to be seen, but also to they encourage me to explore and go deeper into my art, which is what makes a great gallery and which I'm really thankful for. And in Europe, there are some opportunities, but I'm not deciding anything until we know how this lockdown is gonna, how structure is changing or whatever happens. So,
because you've got a solo in London at the moment, haven't you, with a gallery, Mammoth Gallery?
Yeah, but I think it's also closed now.
Yeah, they've all closed. And you had work with Maximilian William, which I actually got to see before we had
lockdown. Nice.
There was a group show there. Samaya Critchlow was in that, and Guston, which was a really nice hang to see you all together.
Yeah.
So I saw the work there. It's exciting. Once we get out to the other side of this, to see where you're going to be showing next.
Yeah, nobody knows. Exactly. But we'll find out.
Just got to keep working.
Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you for coming on, Lynn.
It's
brilliant
to spend some time with you.
Thank you. Thank you.
From our respective homes in quarantine.
I hope to meet you one day in person.
You 100% will. And same. Cannot wait. Big fan.
Okay.
Big fan. So all the images we spoke about today, for listeners, go onto our Instagram page at TalkArt. And then for Lens, you're on Instagram, aren't you?
Yeah, just my name.
Lens
Geerk, G-E-E-R-K, L-E-N, and that's a Z, not an S, on Lens.
But we will also link to Lens so that you don't
big time,
have to
big link. Yes.
All good.
But thank you very much for coming on, mate. That was brilliant. And until next time.
Are you our first German artist we've had on the show? I just thought about that now.
Oh, okay.
I also feel like you might be. Because at one point we were going to go to Berlin and do a whole kind of like Berlin series.
We was.
I also go to Frankfurt a lot, and I love Frankfurt. There's so many great artists there as well. But we need to come to Düsseldorf sometime.
Yeah, you should. There's a lot going on here.
Yeah, totally. Yeah,
I
love Germany. Well, look, lots of love, and thank you so much. And
my pleasure. And all the listeners, ask your neighbors if you can get something for them.
Yes.
Especially old ones.
Yes.
Yes. Good advice. Lovely.
Good advice.
Thanks, Lens.
That's a beautiful thing to say at the end.
Thank you.
Take care, everyone.
All right, take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Talk Art with Robert Diament and Russell Tovey. Follow us on Instagram at Talk Art, where you can view images of all artworks discussed in this episode. Subscribe to Talk Art at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Acast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.